Welcome to the Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuono, attorney in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, sitting in for regular host Mark Thompson on the Paul Revere Show. Welcome to our first half of the program, and thanks for joining us, everybody. We will be joined a little bit later in the program by Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor and candidate for United States Senate, Democratic candidate Mandela Barnes, and I look forward to having a ranging discussion with Lieutenant Governor Barnes. Leading up to that, we have a little time to kill for discussion. So I wanted to relate some experiences that I've had recently in leading up to what is anticipated to be a very controversial Supreme Court opinion that's going to be released later this month or later this summer. In Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. That is the case that was the subject of the now infamous leaked Supreme Court opinion, where Justice Alito, writing for an apparently at least five justice majority, appears set to release an opinion where the Supreme Court's going to overturn Roe versus Wade, the 1973 United States Supreme Court decision that held that a woman's choice to seek an abortion is a constitutional right under the 14th Amendment, right to privacy. And it seems like since that leaked opinion was released and reported on, there was an immediate fury and reaction and counter-reaction and discussion, and then followed by relative calm before what I think is going to be another storm when the opinion is released. So in the time that we have, and I invite our listeners to join us for part of the discussion, if time is available, our number is 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. I'd like to relate some remarks that I've heard and try to pull them together into a theme that is essentially the theme being trust in our institutions and where we're at as a society moving forward. It was impossible to ignore the story, if you were a young adult or an adult, of the leaked opinion in Dobbs. And among the people who noticed that was my 16-year-old daughter. She is the daughter of two attorneys. My wife and I are both lawyers, and so maybe that helped with her noticing the decision. We do the leaked opinion. We do have the news on a lot. And so she asked us some questions about it. We tried as best as we could to explain what we thought this meant and what might be coming. And something stuck out in my mind very vividly as I recalled her response, which was a simple, "I don't think nine people should have that kind of power. I just don't think nine people who sit there for life should have the power to say what our rights are." It caused me, a lifelong attorney who is a player in the institution of law, to pause. My initial response was, "Hate the players, not the game," type of conversational response with my daughter. But her words resonated beyond that conversation, and it really got me thinking. The broader discussion around the leaked opinion often included reference to the fact that this is a major decision where the Supreme Court is going to be taking away rights, in effect, rather than endowing them. And that was not lost on me in the broader discussion. I remember, for example, I think going back almost 20 years now, the United States Supreme Court had an opportunity to undo Miranda versus Arizona, which is the case that requires two officers to read suspects accused of crime their rights, the ones that you see on TV, the right to remain silent, the right to an attorney, the right to a publicly provided attorney. And I remember a scholar at the time, a United States Supreme Court scholar, predicting accurately that the Supreme Court would decline to do that, even though the current makeup of the court at that time was a court that would have presumably been friendly to overturning that decision. And that scholar's reasoning went like this: the Supreme Court is not going to be the court that takes away just about the only right that people know they have, the one that they see on TV, the right to be informed of their rights when they are a suspect in a criminal proceeding. And it made a rudimentary sense to me. And in fact, that decision was not overturned. And it seems now, some 20 years later, that with Roe, a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy is one that obviously the public generally knows about. And this is going to be a court that appears poised to take away rights rather than endow them, such as recent decisions, including the decision that afforded the LGBTQ community to marry members of that community. And so my daughter's remark resonated with me because I thought, you know, this is the kind of decision that causes responses like that. How can we have this institution? And when I hear one person question the very validity of one of the three branches of government in our system, it causes me pause as an attorney, as a legal officer. So that was one conversation that I had. The second category of remarks that I heard was not a conversation as much as it was a talk. I attended the American Constitution Society National Convention last week, Progressive Lawyers Association, the largest in the country. And among the speakers was United States Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. And it was really something to be in a room with the justice, who addressed a few hundred people. And as is her custom when giving talks, she moved about the room, touching people's hands and shaking their hands under the express condition that she extracted from the audience first, that we all stay masked and keep our masks above our noses, as she disclosed that she has been watching her health very carefully and has an underlying health condition. I wanted to be very careful about that, but it was really something to watch her speak. And the other part of the agreement for the justice to speak was that she would not be discussing pending cases before the court or even indirectly referencing issues before the court. Rather, she spoke on broad themes related to her personal life and the Supreme Court as an institution as a whole. And it was extraordinary. I did get to shake the justice's hand, which was also a thrill, briefly, as she spoke. But in looking back on her remarks and that experience, I can't help but think that Justice Sonia Sotomayor was bracing this audience for what was to come. She discussed the infamous Dred Scott decision of the United States Supreme Court, which essentially held that Black people had no rights in the 1857 decision, which the white man was bound to respect as it related to the freedom of Dred Scott, who sued for his freedom after being brought to a territory which was not a slave-enforced territory. And she talked about the long struggle in history that is sometimes necessary when the people who make up our institutions make mistakes. And the duty that what she referenced as the fourth branch of government, which was the people, which is in her opinion, the people, to then respond to and engage and embrace the struggle to reassert their rights all the more. And she took a stroll through Supreme Court history, starting with Dred Scott, taking a stop at Plessy, which further enforced a separate but equal doctrine, and then landing in 1954 with the famous Brown versus Board of Education case as the ultimate reversal of those terrible prior cases and policies. And Justice Sotomayor, I think in her words of struggle, personal challenge, and the ability to move forward was in her own way warning us for what is to come and what might be a long struggle ahead of people on the side of a woman's right to choose to then re-engage that right as a lawful right in American, in our country. Lastly, during that same conference, I had the ability to listen to advocates who work on women's reproductive rights in a panel discussion. And one of the advocates works with Jane's Due Process, which is an organization in Texas. And in a wide-ranging discussion with the other panelists, she was bracing for the Dobbs decision, and which was a decision that, in her opinion, would simply make the work that they were doing in Texas to further inform and support young people seeking abortions, that work would cease, in her opinion. I'm a criminal defense attorney by trade. During my day, I represent people accused of crime in state and federal courts with two great law partners. And the woman attorney who works with Jane's Due Process talked about the anticipation that should they try to assist women, even in going to another state or securing funding to go to another state to secure an abortion, she was quite certain that criminal prosecution and attempts at criminal prosecution and law enforcement intervention would follow for she and her staff. And in a moment of almost tears, she said, "My young people, almost all of them young people of color, are people that I don't want to expose to getting arrested and being prosecuted criminally. And I know that that's going to be the next response." And as I sat in the audience, I thought to myself, well, I've been a criminal defense lawyer for 30 years, and I am often moved to try to help people, either for hire as an attorney or doing pro bono work or being asked to do work at reduced rates. And I thought to myself, is this one of those occasions where, moved by recent events in history and at the Supreme Court level, I'm going to have to evaluate whether the services of my firm and my own abilities as a lawyer are going to have to come into play to assist organizations like that one in helping them and the people that work for them avoid criminal prosecution or respond to criminal prosecution for helping secure a right that was once and still is the law of the land and a constitutional privilege. So the broader theme is trust in our institutions, how we respond to what those institutions do. We are headed into a short break. And on the other side, I would invite us to call in and perhaps share thoughts, or we'll pick up the conversation on the other side. 844-967-2789.